Hello, diners and dinerettes. And we are extraordinarily happy and honoured to present this special bonus episode of the Aftermovie Diner directly to you. It is an exclusive recording of the Q&A that I recently hosted at the Landmark Sunshine on Houston Street in New York City with none other than the director of Maniac Cop 1, 2, and 3, although he recently disowned that, so that's now technically an Alan Smithy film. However, a recent Q&A that I hosted at the theater with Bill Lustig, the wonderful, fantastic, very generous, kind Bill Lustig. So we're going to present that for you now as a special one-off, and we hope you enjoy it. Thanks very much, and keep listening to future Aftermovie Diner episodes.
I want to make sure the audience, if they haven't realized it already, that we know it's ridiculous. So we wanted something that overtly said to the audience, we know it's silly.
This is Bill Lustig talking about the Maniac Cop 2 rap, and I can assure you that the sound does improve, settle down, and there's no more rummaging noises in the next 30 seconds.
So, anyway, yeah, the Maniac Cop rap was something I kind of had this idea. I said to Jay Chataway, I said, you know, it'd be funny, we just have this Maniac Cop rap during the end credits. We don't use we don't just go back to scored music. We just come up with something ridiculous. And I thought it was one of those ideas you throw out, but it kind of lingers in the air. And next thing you know, he came back with the Maniac Cop rap song.
So, do you know who wrote the lyrics?
There was a guy. He's in the credits. It wasn't Jay. Jay did the music, but there was another guy who did the lyrics, and he was brilliant. He came up with these great lyrics.
The Uzi Jacuzzi rhyme is great.
What's that?
The Uzi Jacuzzi rhyme is the best.
Oh, yeah, and what was really funny is when I realized he had taken my suggestion seriously, is suddenly, you know, all these rappers started showing up at our, where we were doing the editing. And I'm going, what are all these guys doing here? And Jay goes, well, you said you wanted a Maniac Cop rap song, so I'm auditioning rap artists. And the guys were terrific. The guys who did the music, who sung it, are terrific. Guys, this is John X from After Movie Diner
Podcast, which is on.
Isn't it perfect? Because this is the kind of movie you would go out to a diner afterwards.
Yeah.
So, any questions? Any questions from you guys? He starred in a movie I made called Maniac.
In the credits, Maniac Cop 2 is dedicated to Joe Maniac Spinell. And in this answer, Bill is explaining to a lady in the audience who asked who that was, who Joe Spinell is.
And he died shortly before we started making this movie, and he was a dear friend who died way too early. And I just felt the need to dedicate the movie to him because he was so much a part of my life, And any of you guys see the movie Maniac I did?
Yeah.
Yes.
Not the remake with Elijah, my movie. Anyway, so that's why I did that. And sad, it was drinking and drugs. And he died at 52, way too young. Brilliant actor. Yes. Yeah.
Well, I have a question, and my wife has a question, but she's a little bit shy.
It's okay. Don't be shy.
I know what it is, but my question was basically the apartment in... Was that supposed to be an apartment in the Brooklyn Bridge, as it were? And if so, is it rent control?
Well, it's a good question, I guess we'd all look for that. Actually, the intent was... You see, I saw... What I liked about doing these Maniac Cop films is I got to make these hybrid movies. I was able to do, my favorite movies are like the Universal Monster movies, RKO Film Noir, The French Connection, the Hong Kong movies of the 80s, So by doing the Maniac Cop films, it gave me the opportunity to kind of make this ultimate hybrid. So my only direction to Robert Davi is, you are Robert Ryan in the RKO film noir, And you know, and I said to Leo Rossi, you're Bela Lugosi Igor in Son of Frankenstein, and but I know you're not going to do a Hungarian accent, so come up with some other accent. And he came up with a kind of a white trash Igor.
But with all the hair and everything and living under the bridge.
Yeah, no, it was exactly the way Bela Lugosi looked. And,
yeah.
And Son of Frankenstein and Ghost of Frankenstein.
That's great.
He had, you know, he was Igor. So I was able, so it was fun because I could do anything. And like it kind of all fit in this wacky universe that we had in these movies. And the fun part is, like, you have, like, a guy like Michael Lerner who comes off the, you know, the Coen Brothers movies, who's playing it totally, you know, he's giving gravitas to this guilt-ridden, you know, police commissioner. And then, oh, the other thing, I don't know if you guys picked this up. Any of you guys Car 54 fans? Ah, I knew it would fly past you. Hank Garrett was one of the stars of Car 54, and he's the cop who gets thrown across the police station. And, you know, these are things. I love Car 54, but I guess I'm older than most of you guys. Yeah.
All right. I have two questions. One, what jail did you film at?
It was a set. It was a set in Culver City.
Wow. Oh,
you could not do... Oh, you're talking about the exterior or the interior?
The interior.
Interior was a set in Culver City. Because we can't go into a real jail and light people on fire and throw them around.
Yeah, you guys, it looked like you were real meticulous about jackets, being like corrections jackets and stuff.
I don't know how I don't recall being meticulous about it.
Because everything, I was like, wow, I was surprised. All right.
The exterior, though, was Rahway State Prison.
Oh, okay.
So what I wanted to do was set up a real exterior to give it, like, you know, like, this is a real prison.
I thought it was
prison. But then, like, the exterior, when we got closer where the bus blows up, that was, like, in some, like, it was on some alley in downtown L.A. And it's, like, bits and pieces we shot all over the place. And the interior was Culver City.
Okay. And my second question is, are you ever going to do another movie, or are you, like, have you called it in? So
well, it's not a call. You know what it is I, you know... It's kind of pain, you know. When I was in the 90s, movie business changed. You know, when we made movies like Maniac Cop 2, there was nobody to answer to. I got to make whatever movie, you know, our group, our creative group, we got together, we made a movie, and there was no parents watching us. And then suddenly it became weird. It's like it became more prohibitive to make the movies you wanted to make, and they became more committee oriented. So I just got tired of it, you know? And so now people want to make remakes. I mean, there's a remake being made of Maniac Cop right now with Nick Reffin, who did Drive and Only God Forgives. And that's being done.
I saw the Maniac remake.
Oh, the Elijah Wood one.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Honestly?
Yeah.
I hated it. I loved your film. Didn't like the remake.
All right. Yeah. Okay. It was different.
Yeah. Going back to the first question, how long did you shoot in New York versus how long you shot in L.A.?
Well, we first started in New York, and we shot in New York for about 2.5 weeks, and then we with our major crew, and then later we came back. Actually, Jim Lemo came. He was coming to visit his parents for Christmas.
Yeah.
I said, "Well, Jim, I need some Times Square establishing shots, and I need a car pass. You know, I need some. You know." So he went out and did some of the car buys and exterior establishing shots. But you know, that's like little pickup shots.
Yeah, but it was mostly night shoots in New York.
Oh yeah, cold.
Yeah,
cold, frigid.
And what was it like filming around sort of 42nd Street in that area back in those times when it was a bit...
Well, we only shot for like one day in Times Square, but I had like a small crew, and we were bouncing around. We did the exterior where Mama Leone's and Phantom of the Opera. We did that. You know, like, so like we shot a few hours there. Then we did the shot where they're dragging the guy out. You know, we like ran around with a van. I did the shot of Davi coming out of the alley and... Well, like, you know, that was, it was no big deal.
No.
I mean, I'm a New Yorker. I know, you know, I'm not like intimidated by the thought, you know, I know how to do it, you know, it was no big deal.
Yeah.
It was no big deal. In fact, I was surprised when we hung the guy on the back of the tow truck. Nobody really gave it a second. Nobody came out outraged.
Just another night.
Yeah, exactly. It was fun. I hate that Mama Leone's. I wanted to find some way to disparage it. The worst restaurant in New York.
Not.
Yeah.
I just was wondering, you know, when the first scene, you know, when you're the paddy wagon gets, you know, driven into the Hudson.
Yeah, that's from the first movie.
Oh, that's from the first. Okay.
Yeah, we did that because they referred when we weren't originally going to do it. Because I had this, like, grandiose idea that everybody who's going to see Maniac Cop 2 has seen the first one. And when I cut the movie together, I realized we really need to see the end of the first one because they keep referring to the paddy wagon in the river, and he was in the river, and, you know, there's all this stuff. And so, you know, we added it, you know.
What was the choice to go? Because obviously in that opening stuff, you've got the makeup on Robert Zadar from the first movie. I understand that you and Larry Cohen wanted to change it up for the second one.
Yeah.
And do a more,
yeah,
a bigger facial.
Yeah,
prosthetic.
We did a more elaborate one for the second one. And because we never really established, to our satisfaction, a good makeup job on the first one. So we were a little more focused on the,
yeah,
second one for the makeup.
Because you went for a full face rather than,
yeah,
just redesigning the... Yeah.
Well, you know, the first one was made for about, you know, was just made for a little more than $1 million, and this one was made for about 3-4 times that amount. So,
yeah.
We had to make it a little better.
But Zadar didn't like it, right? Zadar...
Zadar hated it. Oh, Zadar? Oh, my God. Absolutely hated it. I'll tell you a story about Zadar. It was we were shooting the police massacre scene, and I needed him for like practically every shot in the scene. And it was about 3 a.m, and each setup, because of all the squibs and everything, the squibs are the explosions. It took a lot of time. It took a lot of time to do the setups. So I'm taking a nap in one of the trailers, 3 a.m, I'm exhausted. And it's a tiny little trailer with just a little tiny bed and a folding metal cheap stool. And suddenly, it's a knock on my door, and Zadar enters in his full makeup and uniform, and he sits on this little chair, and he's got his head hung. He goes, "I can't take this anymore." He goes, "When they first put it on, it's amusing when they first put it on. But when I eat, the food goes down between the makeup and my skin and the lights and the smell. It's so disgusting." And I'm looking at him, and suddenly I get the giggles. And I got this big guy there, like, you know, and he's not finding my giggling to be amusing. But I can't stop. I'm looking at him going, "This is so absurd. No one would ever believe it." So he goes, "I want to rip this off." I go, "No, Robin, you can't rip it off. You're in every shot. If you rip it off, we have to wrap shooting." So I go, "Hawaii, think Hawaii. You and your girlfriend. I'll get tickets. When you finish the movie, you and your girlfriend go to Hawaii. Think about Hawaii right now. Focus on Hawaii. Focus on..." And I was like, it was like I was trying to hypnotize him away from his predicament. Yes, anybody else? Sure. And you and... Yeah. Well, what happened is the what was great about Cop 2 for me was it was a culmination of a group of people. We had made like 4 or 5 films back to back, and Spiro Rosados, who I gave him his first shot in the first Maniac Cop, it was like his first major stunt coordinating job was Maniac Cop 1. And he was so outstanding. By the way, you know how I hired Spiro? It's funny. Most guys come in with reels showing their films. Well, he didn't really have any films. So what he showed me were home movies that he had made where he played the theme from Shaft to him running across his mother's rooftop and jumping off of it. And I saw such passion for stunts. So now I hire him, and he was phenomenal. He was the one who doubled Bruce Campbell going into the river on the side. He was just phenomenal. And so we began hanging out together, and we would go see all the Jackie Chan movies. We were going down to L.A.'s Chinatown and going to see all the latest Jackie Chan, Chow Yun-fat films. What was the other guy? Jet Li. I don't know if he was really around then, but there was a few. But they were playing a lot of these, and this is before they became mainstream. This is like, you know, we would see like Rumble in the Bronx like 2 years before it came out in the States. Anyway, and so when we did Cop 2, we were thinking about all the stuff that we had seen in the Hong Kong movies. And we incorporated it into Maniac Cop 2. P.S., Spiro is now the hottest stunt coordinator in the business. He did the last two Fast and Furious films, and he's doing the new one.
Cool.
As well as Captain America. I mean, this guy is like, and all he says to me is, "Bill, I just do it the same way we did on the Maniac Cop movies." he says, like, you know, I said, well, how'd you do this with Vin Diesel? And he'll go, "We just did it, you know, we just did it. We didn't do CGI. There's, you know, very little wire work. We just did it practically." And that's why it has a sense of jeopardy when you see the Fast and Furious films. I mean, there's some stuff that's over the top. But when you see some of the car chase stuff, it looks, you know, it's very impactful because it's real. Yeah.
Anybody else?
Oh, you had a question, yes.
Speaking of the police station massacre, I remember reading that scene almost got the movie an NC-17. Was that true? And if so, what did you have to take out?
No, actually, we didn't have to take out a frame of this movie. And same thing with the first Maniac Cop. Funny enough, the only place that we had to cut something was for the UK, for the first Maniac Cop in the shower scene when they slashed his face, which was a pivotal story point. We had to cut it in the UK on the first Maniac Cop. Funny enough, the exact same flashback contained in Maniac Cop 2 passed in the UK without cuts. So I can't figure those people out. But no, we didn't have to make any cuts for the MPAA, none whatsoever. Yes, we have to leave.
Oh, no, I have a question.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were kicking. No, I'm fine. Do you have any advice for, like, aspiring filmmakers?
Do I have any advice? I mean, you know, okay, I can only tell you for myself, I was obsessive about making movies. I quit high school. I worked in editing rooms. I worked as a production assistant. I was tenacious and trying to apprentice to learn the craft of making movies. And I'd say if you were in film school, quit. I mean, use film school to network. I think film school is very good for networking, but I think it's not the, nobody's going to hire you because you have a certificate, you know, a diploma from NYU. You know, it's just not going to happen. You know, you just work. Just work as an apprentice. The problem is, the older you get, it's harder to work for free, you know, because then you start having responsibilities. I started working for free when I was like 16 years old. I was working in the film business, and I was able to work for free because you didn't look like, you know, like you were backward if you did it. But if you're like 26 and working for free, it starts to kind of feel weird. You know, I mean, it's hard. It's a tough business, but I love it. You know, it's a great business. I've never done any other job since I'm 21. I haven't had any other job. I've never made a living in any other way except for the film business since I'm 21. So it's been good to me. Yeah.
Other than I always wonder, like, what, you have some really great anecdotes when it comes to all this. I was just wondering, when it comes to like what was the weirdest or most bizarre thing that happened on set of this movie? Was there anything else that really was that stood out, other than the fact, like driving around with like a corpse hanging off the back of a tow truck? Oh. I mean, nobody says anything, but was there anything else crazy like that occurred that was like, oh my gosh, what a wild story this is?
Well, you know, the funny part is I think we were like having the monster and the serial killer walk across the Brooklyn Bridge. You know, it was something like, you know, I wanted to do it, and it was, you know, we were just focused on doing as many of those kinds of things as we could, you know. Nobody got hurt during the movie, despite the danger the stunts look, you know, the way the stunts look. Nobody got injured on this film, I'm trying to think of something that was, I'm sure there are. I mean, I'll think of it when I probably leave, but I can't think of it now. Yeah.
Did you get, any really crazy write-ups from a critic about this movie that, stood out, kind of like what happened with Maniac?
Well, you see, the tragedy of this film was that it never got released in America. And I'm so, I feel right now that I have released it from its ghetto as a budget DVD in a bargain bin at Walmart. The film actually played theatrically all over the world. I even had the Pakistani poster to prove it. but in this country, it went straight to video and to HBO. And so it didn't. So to answer your question, it really didn't get any real critical notice. The Blu-ray we've been sending to critics, and it's gotten some outstanding reviews by the critics. It's like everyone's going, where did this movie come from? You know, we didn't even know it exists.
Everyone should buy it. Everyone should go out and buy it. It's fantastic Blu-ray.
Thank you.
It really is. It's great special features. What? Absolutely fantastic transfer. I was going to ask about the process of getting it from, you know, the shitty version that they had on DVD that was like a VHS copy to what we saw tonight.
Well,
which
I just went back to the original camera negative and transferred it in what's called 4K, which is 4,000 lux resolution. And I, you know, that's how we did it. Just go back to the original camera negative.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing though, the Village Voice called it. They just gave it a review this week, and they called it dopey fun.
Well, that's good. There's not enough dopey fun in the world.
Where did you get the movie transferred?
Pardon?
Where did you do the 4K transfer?
Photochem in Burbank. Anybody else have any questions?
Have you ever heard about, I wonder how the NYPD feels about this movie.
Oh, it's funny you should mention that. My brother, who actually he's the first guy who gets shot in the precinct, my brother. when the maniac cop comes in the place, that's my younger brother. He appears in all my movies. My brother is actually a prosecutor in Los Angeles. And he was just telling me that he changed offices. He got transferred to another department. And when he was in there, someone said, would you come with us? And they and they brought him to a lounge area, and in there was a Maniac Cop poster. The cops love it. They go, the right to remain silent forever. They love it. they just love it. No, the cops were. I mean, they were. First off, they knew it was a goof. We're not making, you know, Prince of the City or Serpico or something, you know. We're making a movie called Maniac Cop, and they're like the biggest fans of the movie. Any police officers here? No.
It's a little bit critical.
What's that?
It's critical of, like, police excess and stuff.
Well, it's actually kind of like, no, I don't think it's that critical of it.
No,
I think it's actually, you know, saying, well, you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Anybody else have any questions? No?
Is there... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
One more. Did you ever see Psycho-Cop?
I never saw it, but I actually threatened legal action against the company. Yeah.
I bought it at a flea market a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
VHS.
Yeah, but I know the guy who did it.
It's nothing like... Yeah.
No, I know it's not, but it's... They had used... They said in it, it was such a stretch, the company that released Maniac Cop on video, which had nothing to do with the production of the movie, it said, from the people who brought you Maniac Cop. But it was only referring to the video company. But it made it sound like it was coming from the people who made the movie Maniac Cop. So I threatened legal action unless they removed that from everything.
Talking about the police, there's the story about filming. Was it in New Jersey, late at night around Christmas time?
It was West New York.
The cab scene.
It was the cab scene. Like, if you guys notice, it's a it's got a lot of residential buildings there, and we were shooting all night long, including up to about it when sunrise, and we were making a lot of noise. But it was great because the police in West New York, we were paying them, and they were making their Christmas money. so the way they wanted us to keep shooting, so they would do everything to quiet the neighbors. They were like running interference for us because they were making their Christmas money. So we got to really do a lot of things in West New York that we probably would not have gotten away with any other time of year.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Anyone else?
Is that it? All right. Well, get home safe. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Bill. That was fantastic. Thank you.
Do you like movies? Do you like beards? Do you bathe in raw meat? Do you dance under the fiery sky of Ra, daisies threaded through your man-chest mane? Foolish question. Yes, we all do. But do you do it listening to the podcast from the After Movie Diner? If not, then you're missing out, and you may or may not spend eternity in insufferable torment, wedged between Simon Cowell and Piers Morgan in an elevator that smells of death. The After Movie Diner is a website dedicated to movies. New, old, large, small, and of every genre. There are written reviews, interviews with the famous and interesting, and a weekly podcast with comedy, reviews, interviews, a variety of fascinating and flatulent co-hosts, and music to tap your toe to. So why aren't you on board? Get there or miss out on the podcasting sensation of a generation. One that feels like being slightly tongued by an over-enthusiastic Cocker Spaniel. Find us on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, TalkShoe, and over at aftermoviediner.com.
Like the show? Well, you can find our complete podcast archive over at amdpodcast.blogspot.com or aftermoviediner.com. You can send us an email at aftermoviediner@gmail.com, tweet us at aftermoviediner, or follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/aftermoviediner. Or why not be a part of the show and leave us a voicemail over at speakpipe.com/aftermoviediner. You can also support the show a number of ways, by spreading the word to family, friends and co-workers, by writing us a review over at iTunes or TalkShoe, by purchasing some excellent diner merchandise over at cafepress.com/aftermoviediner, by donating on our website, by advertising with our website, or maybe you're a regular Amazon user. If so, then before you make a purchase, go to amdpodcast.blogspot.com, aftermoviediner.blogspot.com, or aftermoviediner.com and click through the Amazon banner ads. It costs you nothing extra, but they throw us a few coins for the trouble. Or, like the movies we cover, then buy them over at our personal Amazon store, also on amdpodcast.blogspot.com. Really, thanks everybody for everything you continue to do, and please keep listening.
I'm Steven Seagal. That's right, Steven Seagal. And for the past 40 years, in between barbecuing oxen and roasting boar for my insatiable appetite, I never miss an episode of Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid commentaries. Ain't that right, Johnny?
Hi, I'm Dr. Action.
Hi, and I'm the Kick-Ass Kid.
When I'm not watching action films, I'm usually polishing my gun while looking at a bat.
And when I'm not watching action films, I'm normally outside with a harpoon killing puppies.
But usually you can find us both watching 80s, 90s action films. You could follow us on Twitter, Dr. Action Kick-Ass.
You can find us on our main page, which is dractionkickass.blogspot.com.
You can also find us on iTunes and TalkShoe.
Yes, every week we do a commentary on an 80s and 90s action classic, and where we can, we also provide the film so that you can watch along with it.
This podcast explodes.
Hey, where's that baby mama at? I gotta tase somebody.
There are men, and then there are second unit podcast men. Podcast you've just been listening to is part of the Second Unit Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at 2upn.blogspot.com or on Facebook under the Second Unit Podcast Network. Our fantastic list of shows include Drunk on VHS, We came from the basement. No budget nightmares. The after movie diner. Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid. And bloodbaths and boomsticks. Take one podcast into the shower. Don't be a blithering idiot, Alan. We can give you the multiple podcast cleansing system all in one place and your hair deserves. Our programming is available across all platforms from iTunes to Podomatic, TalkShoe to Stitcher, so you have absolutely no excuse. Listen today and a free naked person of your choice will be shipped from Thailand to your door in a matter of weeks. The Second Unit Podcast Network. Bringing you the action and leaving the boring stuff to the other guys. Bloody hell. Who does a girl have to blow around here to get a decent beverage?